we go. Oh, baby, welcome to Duck It Motherfucking Dialogue.
Oh, man, that was pretty good.
Going hard here.
Alrighty, baby. I'm here with a really special guest today. Super excited to have him on the show. He's been killing it in the country music scene, country rock scene. He was on the show Real Country. Really cool guy, dude. Super glad to have you here, Pat, with Miller Holler.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Yeah, man. So I want to talk about first, like, kind of how you got into music and, you know, what kind of sparked that, because it seems like you started off really young in music. I think you said you did your first performance at 13, if you're, I'm correct.
Yeah, first paid for performance at 13. So
did you do other before that, like unpaid?
I started off playing in church. So, you know, those gigs don't pay, but they're good because people usually don't judge you. You know, that's like one of Christ's big things.
So. Nice. So was your family big musicians, or how did you kind of get into that?
Yeah, man. So my dad is a musician, and from the time that, you know, I mean, there's a picture of me maybe 1 or 2 years old, still in diapers, trying to, you know, play his guitar. He's sitting there playing it, and I'm reaching up trying to hit the strings, but there was always a guitar around. I mean, I was plucking on them from as early as I can remember, not really able to play.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, so I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. My dad always had a full-time job, and he was always a musician. So like on Fridays after work, he would drive to, you know, we lived in Virginia. He would have to drive sometimes to other states, play a show, and then he might not get back till 2 or 3 in the morning. But like when he would walk back in the door, you know, me and my little sister would be waiting up, and he would walk through the door with that guitar case 2 or 3 in the morning. He might have like some hot Krispy Kreme donuts because the light was on, you know, and it was just like the coolest thing to me. I was totally infatuated and just like, man, this is awesome. You know, like my dad might've just been playing country clubs or, you know, lounge rooms or whatever at that time. But to me, it was like seeing freaking Axl Rose walking through the front door, you know, like, this guy is a rock star, and my dad's still my hero. So yeah, you know, got my first guitar when I was 7, didn't really start playing it until I was about 12, when I realized my other buddies who were playing guitar were getting girls.
Yeah.
And I was like,
that's a
I need
big
to get
game
serious
changer
about this. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I was a real goofy. I'm still goofy and awkward, but like you should have seen me then, man. I was even worse.
So did your dad teach you how to play the guitar and everything? And or did you learn from elsewhere?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people are like, did you take lessons? Can you read music and all that stuff? And it's like, I cannot read a lick of music. Mm-hmm. I would just have a song that I liked. And my dad would, I would say, Dad, how you play that? Or I'd watch him play it. And I'd say, hey, show me that, you know? So I would go into our basement and play and work on a part of a song. The first song I really took seriously was Stairway to Heaven.
Okay.
And, I was like obsessed. I wanted to learn every part. There's so many parts to that song. Mm-hmm. And my dad's like, if you can learn this, like you could play anything.
Yeah.
It's like, all so I'm like, okay, cool. So like, I would go down and work on the intro for a little bit. Dad, and then I come up the steps. Dad, does it go like this? Does it go like this? He would say, oh, I'll play it like this. Here's how it goes. And then I go down in the basement for another hour or two and come back up when I was stumped. Hey, does it go like this? And you know, before long I was picking it up, catching on, and it just snowballed from there, man. Once I could, you know, play a tune, and I started writing songs like right after that, because I was like, I was very creative as a kid, very imaginative. We grew up in the woods, and you really have to have an imagination when there's no other kids around.
Yeah.
So it was a great way for me to just get all that out. And, you know, when you're 12, 13 years old, you're hitting puberty, you're a little bit angsty with the girls and everything, you know, oh, I'm heartbroken, you know, whatever. So that was a great, it was a great outlet for that. It's like the best journal, the best therapy, and the best like creative expression for me anyways. I was just playing that guitar. So,
so like I said,
start out in church. And
when you were singing, did your voice change at all to where it was, did you have like a weird period where your voice was just not working?
Well, yeah, but not because of what you would think. It wasn't really because of like puberty or anything, you know. I wasn't like a Justin Bieber where I had some super high voice or anything like that. And then it like got deep and nobody wanted to hear us. But no, I was probably changed for the worse in college. We were just out partying and drinking Jim Beam and carrying on all day and night. So I sounded like a barking dog when I would try to sing. I was so hoarse all the time, you know. So that is one thing, you know, we do take a lot better care of ourselves these days. Gallon of water a day, exercise, trying to eat right, trying to get enough sleep when you can.
Yeah.
And all that helps. But yeah, I mean, you know, voice pretty much the same the whole time, you know, and unless I'm carrying on. If you hear me and I'm real, I either have allergies or we've been carrying on. So, yep.
So your first gig you did, your paid gig, you did at 13. Where was that, and what was that like? I'm still here. My camera just messed up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're good. Yeah, man. So there was a festival called Festival in the Park in Roanoke, Virginia, where I grew up. And during that festival, my dad always had a slot, and we would play this one like gazebo, or there was like an amphitheater that my dad would play sometimes. And then we would do like a kid's session at the library. So we would do like Old MacDonald and, you know, all the like kid songs. But yeah, man. So that was my first paid gig. It was actually like two or three gigs in one day. And I was just standing there. Scared as I could possibly be. I was playing bass at the time, and I'm just standing there like a freaking stick, like, don't mess up. You know, like, my dad's like, hey, it's okay to look like you're having fun when you're playing. And I'm like, yeah, I'm so nervous. What if somebody I know is here and I'm, you know, I screw up, or I'll never live this down in school, whatever, you know?
That's so funny.
And now, so like stage presence is like my number one thing. You know, I always tell people I get by with a decent amount of talent, but a lot of stage presence. You know, it's like I do enough to get by.
Yeah.
With the guitar and the singing and everything. But it's like, I want to interact with the crowd. I want to exchange that energy with you, you know, because that's, man, when you've got a good crowd and they're into it and they're, you know, screaming and dancing and having a good time, it's like, that makes us feel good. So you could be the best singer in the world, but if you're just sitting there on a bar stool, you know, how much are you really conveying? I grew up watching guys like Eddie Van Halen and David Lee Roth jumping off of freaking speakers and stuff. And it's like, I want to do that. Or if you've ever seen a Slipknot show, it's all theatrics, you know? Yep. And it's like, dude, this is why people come to the show. They want the show. If they just want to hear the music, they can go put the record on.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I want to deliver for you. If you come out and spend your hard-earned money and hard-earned time, the one thing that we can't get back, if you're going to be generous enough to come give me your time, I'm going to do the best I can do for you, and we're going to have a good time.
That's awesome. Yeah. So it's funny, man. When you're a kid like that too, and you know, you're doing that show and you think, especially as like a teenager, you're like, man, this, if I don't do this right, my whole life will be over. You know, you think that the whole world's eyes are on you at that point. And then once you kind of realize like, hey dude, you know, people forget fast, you know, and they're move on to something. Very so fast. If you do something and mess up, who cares? At least you tried, you grew from it. And now you're not going to, you know what it's like. So you don't have that unknown, you know, it's always the fear of the unknown that people have. And when you prepare for that, you know, it kind of mitigates a little bit of that, but yeah, you just got to fail forward, dude. Keep failing.
and if you're gonna fail at 100%, 100 miles an hour, you know what I mean? I can't stand it when I'll see guys and they'll kind of pull off the mic when they're hitting a big note or whatever, and it's like, dude, if you ain't confident in that note, just either nut up and give it all you got, or just don't sing it at all. Like, and there's some nights where I've got a real high note on something, it's like, I'm gonna back off of this. I know my limitations, you know, but if not, I'm going for it. And I might, hey, the voice might crack, but I always think about what my sweet little Italian grandmother says. You know, she would say, Patrick, they can't all be winners. And I'm like, okay, you know, you can't win every time, but if you just got to go out there and play the game. So
It's more authentic way. It's just you're in the moment. You're not thinking about hitting that right. You know, you're like, you're just going for it, and it, you're not, you don't have that little bit holding you back. Once you release that, you know, you can. The whole world opens up. But once you're in your head and thinking about the technical side of things and you're worried about it, it's just it doesn't come through as a, you know, pure, authentic, genuine performance.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I love to post those performances on TikTok and hear all the TikTok credit, you know, critics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's tons of
them. Oh, my God. Even if I post a video that is perfect, somebody will say, it was a little fast at first, or, you know, oh man, you know, what have you tried playing one of these guitars instead of that guitar? And I'm like, you know, hey,
like, what is
you can't make
play?
Everybody happy.
They're like, none. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Like I always go to their page and I see it. I'm like, okay, no videos. Like, all right, nothing. But you're an expert critic, so I'll give you that. You know.
Hey, if clearly. Most of the time is the people not doing. There's nobody doing more than you that's going to criticize you, right? You know, it's always people that are doing less or, you know, want to, they have something inside that they want to do that they're probably too afraid to do, or, you know, just stuck in a lifestyle that they think they can't transition to that career or whatever the heck they want to do. They're just fear-based. So then they project those fears onto other people. You know,
man, and it's you know, that was a self of or a point in my life of like self-awareness. When I heard that quote, you know, people who are doing more than you are never going to criticize those who are doing less.
Yep.
And because I, you know, COVID hit, to give you a little backstory, I'd been with a band for 10 years and then COVID hit and we broke up and I had just started a new band, Miller Holler. Mm-hmm. And I just saw all these guys, you know, around me kind of blowing up and stuff. And I'm just like, oh, F that guy, you know, screw this guy, sounds like shit. And then I heard somebody say that quote and I was like, oh, shit. I was like, is that me? I was like, am I the guy that's not doing a lot? And, you know, it lit a fire under my ass. It really did. And I was like, and it made me more of the mindset, hey, you know what? If people are getting success, there's plenty of it out there. Yeah. We can all have a piece of this.
Yep.
I mean, now with the capabilities of the internet, you can reach so many people. We just had 500,000 views on our last video.
Nice.
On TikTok. And it's like, dude. You know how many shows I'd have to play to reach 500,000 people?
Yeah.
Oh, like unreal. But I was super against TikTok. I saw all these kids blowing up on TikTok. Every video I post gets like 30 views. And then I'd post a video of a steak and it would get 1,000 views. And I'm like, oh, well, okay, great. Maybe I should have been a chef, you know, like.
Well, that's like you said, it was very self-aware to realize that, you know, you were doing that, because a lot of people don't see it, you know, like, hey, you either get better or get bitter. You know what I mean? And most of the time when you're bitter, it's because you see somebody where you think you should be. But, you know, it takes a lot of mental fortitude or self-awareness to really sit back and go, you know what? Maybe I'm not working hard enough. Maybe I need to do this differently. You know, like work on yourself instead of, you know. And then that helps you appreciate and go, hey, I'm glad that you made it. You know, you lose that bitterness. You lose that, you know, I want to be in your position and I should be there. You know what I mean? So it just.
Dude, absolutely.
Which opens up a lot of doors too.
You are, and I don't know if you've ever listened to Andy Frisella. He's a guy over at, the MFCEO project, which was his entrepreneur podcast. It was like the number one entrepreneur podcast in the world. But Andy always talks about, he says, you are exactly where you deserve to be. He says, if you have not put in work, then don't, you know, wonder why somebody else out there is getting ahead of you.
Yeah.
You know, if your life is shit, what have you done to get there? You know, if your life is good, what does that look like when you got there? And, you know, I think about that stuff all the time. I think as creators, we're our biggest critics. I'm sure you're your biggest critic. When you go back, I don't know, if you know, listen to some of your first podcasts or whatever, and you're like, man, I was green on this or whatever, or like the sound is the way I wanted it. And you're like, oh gosh. But you just got to fight through that, dude. And that's where, instead of saying, oh, we had a bad show, or or this guy's blowing up, F it, man, I'm just going to go, you know, do my own thing and be bitter. Like, no, you figure it out. Yep. And You know, you're talking about fear. I think a lot of fear comes from the unknown. So like, and for me, my fear, you know, just being a man and having kind of that mentality of like, okay, no weakness, we're not scared of anything. My fear gets translated directly into like anger.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, F this, you know, I'm not scared. F this, I don't need it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. But
yeah. So anyways, I hired a couple guys to teach me about this social media stuff. Cause I'm like, dude, we've played thousands of shows over the span of 20 years, you know, and if TikTok is the thing that's going to break us like out of this spot that we're in, then maybe we should invest in this and figure it out. Because I hear so many people who aren't musicians going, man, are you guys on TikTok? I find so many great new artists on TikTok. Yeah. And I'm like, damn it. I'm like, no. And so that was always frustrating. So this year I said, screw it, man. I paid a couple of guys and they helped me out. And they gave me some pointers. Hey, here's, you know, what the algorithm likes. Here's how you make a reel or whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay. So then once I had that, a little bit of understanding and a little bit of knowledge on the topic, it wasn't as scary.
Yeah.
I wasn't as bitter. I wasn't as resentful. I was like, okay, now this is a tool that I know. It was the same as when I tried to learn how to weld for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, the first weld you lay down looks like a freaking, like you just blew your nose. It looks horrible.
But you can't get past that point unless you try it. You know what I mean? You got to do it. You got, and like you're saying, you know, looking at my past podcast or something, like all the ones that things went wrong and, you know, that's all stuff I learned and grew from that. I'm like, I appreciate it so much where I look back on it. I'm like, dude, if I'd still be at that point if I never tried it. You know what I mean? You got to do, there's a planning period, but there's also a lot of people get, you know, paralysis through analysis where they think it has to be perfect. Everything has to be this way. And then they never push themselves to do it. You know what I mean? Like a dreamer versus a doer type of thing, you know? So it's like the people that just do without, you know, I'm just going to do it, bro. Like that's the mentality you got to have.
Man. And you know, it was so funny right before COVID hit, I prayed to God. I said, God, I said, my life's going, you know, we're kind of here. I know that discomfort is growth. I said, give me a little discomfort. I prayed for a little discomfort. Well, then COVID hit. Then my band broke up. Then my new band wasn't touring. I was like, I got it, dude. I got it. But it's like, you know, you have to get through those trials and tribulations and grow and figure out, okay, like that's the only way. But the best advice that I ever got coming into the music business was, there's no replacement for stage time. Mm-hmm. You and I, you could sit here and talk on the microphone to yourself all day. I could sit here and play guitar and sing my songs all day. But until you get on stage and things go wrong and you're in a live setting and you've got to figure it out, like that is where you hone your skills. You know, everybody thinks, oh, yeah, I've got to practice for thousands of hours. No, dude, go be bad.
Yeah.
Get up.
Go
and
be bad.
Go be bad. Like, and that was a huge thing. So in 2019, my wife and I, you know, I mentioned I like to do a little welding fabrication and we're big into Jeeps and stuff. So we bought an old Jeep, salvage title, ripped everything out from under it, all the suspension. And dude, I don't know. I never built a freaking custom, you know, rock crawler, but I had heard somebody say that because I was really experiencing that analysis paralysis. Mm-hmm. And you know what, dude, like we learned a lot. I learned a ton. We started building this thing and now it's almost to the point where it's going to go down the mountain. So,
then you can go back through that process again and then it's just easier every time. You know what I mean? You have that groundwork, you have that experience, you have that. You
know. Right, man. It's like, you know, that was one thing. I always wanted a big Jeep. I had Jeeps from the time I was a kid. Just, we would go ride trails, mildly built, you know, streetable Jeeps. And then I saw these guys with these rock crawlers and from the time I was a kid and I was like, oh my God, like I want one of those. I want one of those. Yeah. And I'm sure you've heard this expression, wish in one hand, shit in the other and see which one fills up. So I was like, all right, how can we make this work? And you know, we made it work. It's been a long ride, 3 or 4 years since we've been building this thing, but it's almost done. And to see that, you know, it's a testimony to persistence, mm-hmm. because I could have gave up 2 years ago and said, ah, screw it, we'll sell it, we got good parts, we'll make some money back. I'm like, no way, dude. Yeah. I'm in it for the long run. Exactly. Like, we're too far deep. Like, we're going to get this thing finished. And, you know, we had to swallow our pride a little bit, ask for some help from some friends, you know, and because I was like, oh, I'm going to do this on my own. I can do this. Get to some points and you're like, I need a hand. You know, and that was a big point of growth for me, is being able to ask for help. I feel like, again, as men, we want to take the load and carry the whole load on our shoulders. And it's all right to ask a brother for some help, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that takes a lot, too, to be able to see that and realize that, hey, dude, like, I can either struggle super hard or just, you know, eat my pride and just ask for help. And when you realize, hey, if you ask for help, it's not, you don't get the reception that you think you're going to get. You know, you're like, you know, you have this, oh, no one's gonna help me. No, you know, no one wants to do this, blah, blah, blah. And then you ask and like, oh, I do have support and I have people who care and have people who are willing to do things for me and help me. And you know, it's good.
Yeah.
And like you talked about, you know, how at the beginning of COVID and everything was kind of piling up on you, you know, band breaking up or right before that. And,
yeah.
All these things kind of happening. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of these things that we look at as negatives could be things that happen for a reason to get you to where you need to be. Right. So you know, you have all these perceived negative things happening, which are really bumpers, right? Kind of like guiding you where you need the path you need to go to. So I appreciate anytime something bad, I'm like, there's a reason behind this, right? There's something that is pushing me this way or the other, and I should not fight it. You know, I need to let it flow through it, you know?
Man, absolutely. And that's, you know, whether it's a bad experience with your job or your relationships or your family or whatever it is, it's like, you know, I've gone through some hardships where at the time I'm like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me, right? Yep. Or like, I dated a girl for a year and a half and we just fought all the time, and then we broke up, I was devastated, and it hurt me for a long time. Now looking back, instead of saying, gosh, I wasted a year and a half dating the wrong person, I said, well, I learned this, and this, you know, so it wasn't a waste of time. And that's any bad thing that happens is, you know, I try to learn from that. I try to pull a lesson out of it, because if not, you'll just go crazy and think, woe is me. And exactly. Oh my gosh, why did it happen to me? And it's like, well, I'll tell you why it happened to you, dummy. Cause you dated the wrong girl. You were an idiot. Lessons learned, you know.
That's where I get, like, I really appreciate my military career, just from, you know, being in the military. And I was a medic in the Army, deployed to Afghanistan. And,
oh, thank you for your service, man. Thank you. Hell yeah.
Thanks for paying your taxes. No. you know, I look at myself at, you know, 18, you know, right when I was joining the Army, and the mentality I had and what I was doing. And I'm like, who knows where I would have been at? Like, yeah, I went through a lot of shit, but all of that shit is, I wouldn't trade a single thing. Not the worst of it, the best of it, none of it. I would, because all of that makes you, you know what I mean? Like, with your relationship Absolutely. That went bad, you learned a lot of, you know, what not to do. You learn from it, you grow from it. So there's nothing a waste. Right. If you can look at it and really pick out, like, okay, how can I have changed this situation, or what do I need to do differently, or how do I react to this situation, and really analyze that, you can grow past a lot of those perceived negative things. Absolutely. You know?
Absolutely. And you know, it took a few years, but the next girl I actually dated ended up being my wife. So it was See? Like, and she was about the exact opposite of the last. And I was like, okay, cool. This girl doesn't want to fight with me. She doesn't want to beat me up. Like, you know, she's never called the cops. This is great. Like, I love this. You know, she doesn't have a drug problem, you know?
Yep. Oh yeah. So I guess let's fast forward a little. You were on that show Real Country, right?
Yeah.
How did that, I was trying to find the performance you were talking about, but I could not could not for the life of me find it. I was like looking all, so I'm like Googling. And I'm like, I can't find this.
It's probably, they probably took it down. That show only ran for a season. It was back in 2018 and I was with my last band. We were a duo and one of our buddies called us one day in the music business and he said, hey, this guy I work with has an opportunity to go on this show, but he can't do it because of his tour schedule. He's like, would you guys be interested in auditioning for the show? We're like, yeah, you know, we'll audition.
Let's
and
do it.
Got the audition. Yeah. And, you know, that's when people say it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about that network, you know. So, and that's another reason why I champion for people who are doing more for me now, because it's like, yeah, I want you to do well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we all kind of came up together. Like one of my buddies just got a Luke Bryan cut and I'm like,
oh,
dude,
wow.
That is amazing. Country on, it actually went number one. My buddy Styles Hari and,
no shit.
Dude. And it's like, we were playing acoustic gigs with this guy 6-7 years ago, you know,
that's
and
cool.
He was just green as a tomato on a vine. And,
yeah.
And, you know, we're like, oh, this guy's good. You know, he's good, whatever, but just got him with the right folks. And he's just a great guy and he's writing with some great people now. And, like I said, he got the Luke Bryan number one is great. And, so anyhow, real country, going back to that, yeah. So we got on the show, they said, we're going to start filming in about 3 or 4 months. So I was 230 pounds and just like kind of gelatinous and not taking care of myself. And
oh,
I
wow.
said, I'm not being fat on TV.
Nice.
People were asking me, oh my God, how are you losing all this weight? I'm like, it's not that difficult knowing that you're going to be on national television. You know,
yeah,
I'm like, when you have that pressure on you, I'm like, I gotta be in shit. So I cut from 230 down to like 198,
no
which
shit.
I hadn't been 198 since 10th grade, you know?
Yeah.
I was feeling good. We were eating right. I found out about like another learning experience. I learned all about health. I'm like, best diets. I'm like, oh, what is keto? So I did keto and it worked great. And like kind of carnivore stuff, you know, eating a lot of steak, a lot of eggs. And just trimmed it right off, dude. Went to the gym, pumping weights, not a lot of cardio, just pumping heavy weights and it worked. So I'm a huge proponent for like fitness. It helped with my mental health tremendously. Yeah. So yeah, you know, we did the show. The producers are hyping us up the whole time. Hey, yeah, you know, you guys are great. If you guys don't win this show, I'm going to manage you and we are going to go all the way. You guys are amazing. You know, these are the things that we're hearing and then
blowing smoke up your ass.
Oh, bro. Hard. You know, hey, some of those people were very sweet and we're still friends to this day. I actually had a lawn business at the time that we were filming that show. And after we were off the show, one of the producers said, hey, I live in Nashville. Can you cut my lawn? And I'm like, yeah. So I cut her lawn for like 3 years after the show, you know?
That's funny.
And we all stayed friends. It's no hard feelings. You know, this is the entertainment business. And if you got thin skin, it probably ain't for you. And I'm not going to act like I'm the toughest guy in the world. Like I'm sitting there in front of a full crowded auditorium in Nashville, right? It's the municipal auditorium that used to be like the main civic center. And then, I mean, packed house, Shania Twain, Travis Tritt, Jake Owen sitting there in front of us. I'm like, man, this is like huge. My parents drove in from Virginia. They're sitting back there, my wife. And then Shania was just like, yeah, you know, I just didn't like it. You know, it just didn't seem authentic to me. It sounds like everything else. And to her, you know, here's the thing. It probably did. It probably did. We were still growing. But back then I'm like, oh, we're ready. We're ready.
Yeah.
You know, get the right people behind us. We're ready to go all the way, be on the big stage. So that was like a dose of humility.
Yeah.
That we really had to, oh man, it was tough. And that hurt like hell. And I fell out of my workout routine. I, you know, got a little depressed and real salty towards the business.
Mm.
And, you know, that really did carry on until about the end of the band. The band broke up at the end of 2019. And And, you know, that's why when the band broke up, I said, I need to focus. I need to grow. I'm in this like salty ass place. I'm a person right now that I do not want to be. And, you know, music is like I said, dude, this is my journal. This is my therapy. This is my love, like my passion. And, for that to turn into something that you just despise, you know?
Yeah.
Because dude, I mean, when you're out on the road, you get it being in the army, like you're going to miss things. Mm-hmm. Like you miss birthdays, you miss funerals, yeah. You miss weddings, yeah. Like, you know, and to go play in some cornfield in Illinois for a bunch of drunk kids that don't even know your name. You know, yeah. It's like, I miss my grandmother's funeral for that. Like yeah. it was, you know, you can go to another wedding. You'll probably go to your friend's next wedding, but you know,
yep. They're not going to do a redo.
You know, that's what I always tell people. Hey, funeral, I try and make every funeral now because that's the last time I'm going to see you.
Yeah.
And that's tough. And you know that, like I said, dude, those hardships that it lets you know, okay, like, where am I here? Like on this, am I doing what I want to do? Is this the life that I want to live? Is this how I want to live it?
Mm-hmm.
And, we found a nice balance. We have like really fallen into a nice balance. I'm the sole proprietor of our band now, as to where before we were a duo. So it was like, if I get a gig, that guy feels committed. You know, we're going to go do the gig no matter what. He gets a gig, I'm committed. Like, we're going. It's not like you could just sub one of us out.
Yeah.
And so now it's like I have a little bit more control over what shows we play, when we're playing. Hey, if I see my sister's wedding is on December 10th, I'm going to it. You know, yeah. It's not like, oh, well, something's going to pop up in November and sorry, sis, I can't come to the wedding, you know, because back in the day when we were grinding and that's all that mattered. And we thought, oh, my God, if we miss a gig, we're going to not make it.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, family first. Like, that is my number one rule. All my guys. I'm like, look, if you got something going on, dude, we'll find a sub. Like, I'm the only one that has to be there every time, you know?
Nice.
So I try and really, really push that and take care of my boys because I never want them to be in that situation and have to feel like, oh my God, like I'm missing something
yeah.
that I'm not going to get to experience again for something that I do every weekend and really is minuscule in the grand scheme of things, you know? Yeah.
It kind of seems like that helped balance your life work, you know, get a life work balance and really kind of put everything into different categories and be like, I need to put time aside for this, 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 and this, you know what I mean? And have those. Absolutely. I get it. When you're focused and you want to succeed so bad that you just tunnel vision and you get all, everything else is just a blur, you know, and you just keep pushing forward and you're like, man, I need to step back a little. I need to balance my life. I need to, you know, have my family as a, I don't want to be the person that works all the time and I'm on my deathbed. And then I'm like, oh, I never even, I wish I, all that, those hours I worked, I wish I could have spent with my kids or my wife or, you know, my family. So it's good that you've kind of gotten into that position where you prioritize things like that and put those things, you know, where they need to be.
Yeah, man. How old are you?
35.
How old are you? 35?
Yeah.
35?
35.
Okay, yeah. I'm 33. But, I mean, yeah, and I'm 33, and I feel like a lot of people in our generation have heard that story. Yeah. You know, oh, my dad was on his deathbed and said he would have spent more time with the family, mm-hmm. you know, and we've all known that, and I feel like with the information that's available to everyone now, it's like, okay, there's other ways to make a living. You don't have to be a billionaire to be happy. Most of those guys blow their freaking brains out, yep. you know? So it's like, if we can have enough and do some of the things that we like to do, take a nice vacation once a year, you know, and spend time with our families. Like, dude, I got my wife sitting here on a Sunday and, you know, I'm off the road this weekend. And it's been great.
Yeah.
But you know, now my Sorry. Mindset,
sorry, I dragged him in.
Hey, so she is actually big in the fitness world. So she works for First Form Fitness. And so she's working on some of her stuff right okay. now, getting her planned out. And Yeah, man. So it's all good. You know, we do a lot, a decent amount of time to say, okay, let's work on our stuff now. Yeah, like we'll work for a little bit and then we'll go play or whatever. So yeah, you know, it's a nice day down here in Tennessee. We might take the dogs out on the river or something like that. Go for a canoe ride. But I love that stuff, you know, and in the past, a weekend off would have killed me. It would have been like, oh my God, I'm missing out on this money and this, that, and the other. Or like we would take a family vacation. One thing I regret is being nervous on vacations.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't take a week off. This is peak touring season, you know? It's like, dude, looking back, you know, we went to the beach with her family some years ago. And when I was with my last band, and it's like, oh gosh, like we should be touring or I should be cutting grass or whatever. And I'm like, dude, the grass is going to be there when you get back. Like the freaking, you know, the road's going to be there when you get back. There's going to be shows. Nobody's going to fault you for taking a week off. It's like, man, I wish I could have just like been in that moment, been more present, not been thinking about this, that, and the other. And I really try and focus on that now, man, and just enjoy the time that you have with the people that you have, because I mean, especially since COVID, we've seen so many people just not staying around anymore, you know? Yeah. And you know, my mom got cancer back in 2018, and then Pops had some health issues here in the last few years, and you just realize, you know, they're not going to be here forever. And this is, you know, when I get to spend time with them, dude, that's all I care about. Like that is, I'm 100% focused, and I do feel guilty a little bit about not being able to spend more time with them. But at the end of the day, I think they would like to see me out being productive, chasing my dream, using my gifts, using my abilities, instead of living in their basement and, hey dad, I get to see you every day. You know? Like, yeah, wish you didn't.
Pretty soon he'll be moving into your basement.
Right. Yep. That's funny. I'm gonna ask my wife for some coffee. Come say hey to the camera. Come on, the camera wants to see you.
Say hello.
All right. Say hello. Come on, just say hey. Just say hey real quick.
I'm still in my pajamas.
Oh, that's okay. Me too. My bottom half is in pajamas.
That's right. Hey, check it out, dude. Yeah.
Yep, that's the best part.
Lazy Sunday morning. I'll be out there walking my dogs in my PJs and a cowboy hat, and people are like, this guy is just missing me. Come on, thing. I ain't worried about it, you know?
So I want to talk too about like kind of the some of the songs that you had, like that Thrive I liked a lot, the High Cotton I liked, I can't remember some of the, there was some, a few other ones that I just kind of put you on like shuffle, and I really like the pace and the style, like it's really like a country rock kind of mix, and it's I just really like that kind of, you know, I really liked when like Jay-Z and Linkin Park mashed up and stuff like that. And so I you guys have like a really cool, like fast pace, you know, a lot of, it's just a really cool sound. You know what I mean? It's not your standard country. And I don't know the genre, what it's called, but I really like it.
Dude. And that is, you know, Thrive. And I appreciate that, first of all, but Thrive and High Cotton and Got It Made, those were the first three we did. Thrive and High Cotton were kind of more of our passion sound, we'll say. Like, we don't care if this blows up. We know this ain't going to be on the radio. This is just what we dig.
And I like
and
that one.
And then Got It Made. Right. You know? And so then we did Got It Made. And that was our actually like first radio single that got played on a lot of small market around the country and a lot of places that we played. And I was like, okay, cool. So like, the modern country, the kind of radio sound, that's what gets you gigs, right? Yeah. And then you go give them the stuff that you want. So like when you come to see us live, instead of like Luke Bryan and a lot of like Eric Church, Jason Aldean, which I, you know, those guys are great, but you're going to hear a lot of like Marshall Tucker, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Allman Brothers, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan. We do a Metallica cover, you know.
I saw
like,
that.
We do a Bruno Mars. We do freaking, what's the guy's name? Ain't No Sunshine, Bill Withers. Yep. So, you know, And then we still do some of the modern stuff, but man, you should see these crowds, 21-year-old kids, when you bust into a Stevie Ray Vaughan song and they are just on fire. Nice. Like, you know, it's like, this is, people thought that this music was forgotten about, but dude, they're classics for a reason.
Yeah.
You know? And so we pull from all that. If you listen to Thrive, you can hear some Metallica influence. Mm-hmm. You can hear some Skynyrd influence. You can hear, you know, a little bit of all of that. Like when we did the solo, there's a big old slide part at the end of the solo. And I'm like, yeah, dude, got to have some slide guitar on there. Cause that's my man, you know, Dickie Betts and those guys in the Allman Brothers were doing all that slide stuff. So we pull a lot from all those, or like High Cotton. I said, what would it sound like if Sublime and Skynyrd made a song?
No, okay. I'm like, yes. Okay. Yes. I see, you know, that. Yeah. So nice.
It kills me today when I hear people say, I only listen to country.
Yeah.
You know, I only listen to rap, or I only listen to rock. Like, it's like, but do you? And like, again, people our age, we got to grow up with so much different influence in music. Yep. So like, and there's nothing wrong. If you want to go out and sound like Johnny Cash or sound like Waylon Jennings and everything you do sound like that, that is fine, dude. Like I said, there is room for all of us. Mm-hmm. But for me, artistically, I'm like, dude, I ain't going to put us in a box, because there's some songs that are like Stuck. Stuck is a great radio country song. And I'm like, this is a fun song. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of people love this song. Why would I say, well, we're a Southern rock band, we don't do that radio shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, dude, my rule is, if we're going to cut something, let's just cut a good song.
Yeah.
Let's just, I don't care if it's R&B, if it's rock and roll, if it's freaking death metal, you know, whatever. So taking that mentality, and like you said, like Thrive and High Cotton, some of your favorite ones, the ones that we were like, you know, these are just what we like.
Yeah.
That's the whole direction. That's the direction we're going this whole year. So good. We're in the studio next week, cutting three songs that are just rock and roll, man, Southern vibe. But it's like high energy stuff that I am so pumped about. And it's like, because we don't have that inhibition of like, oh, is the radio going to like this? Mm. Like, screw the radio, dude.
Exactly.
Like, this is going to be on the internet for our entire lives. When I'm 90 years old, I mean, you know, or 60 or whenever I die, I want to look back and say, hey, we got a lot of hard miles on us, but I want to look back and say, we did something that I wanted to do. You know, yeah. This is music that we were into, we were feeling it, you know. We weren't worried about what the record man said. We weren't worried about, is Jason Aldean going to cut this song? You know, we just want to make good music that's, number one, fun to listen to, fun to play live, and that people can relate to, man. You know,
that's a great space to be in, dude. A great headspace to be in. And like you said, you need the radio, things are good, and you have some of those, and that gets people introduced to you. So it helps expand your audience base and stuff. And, you know, I get the hesitancy with the TikTok thing, because I was the same way. I was like, man, I don't want to get on. And then I got on, and I was like, I actually like what's going on here in the TikTok realm. So it's, you know, you have that stigma, you know, initially you're like, why the heck would I get on that? You know? And then finally,
it's like, I'm not going to be dancing on TikTok.
Yeah. So, and then once I got on there, I was like, oh, it's really not, everyone was like, you know, saying it was this and that. I'm like, I guess it really caters to your algorithm, you know, because I see all sorts of music stuff, like conspiracy theory stuff all the time. Like, I see all, you know, stuff that I like looking into. So, I don't know. I think that the TikTok algorithm is just, it helps, because it doesn't matter if you have zero followers, or if you have a million, dude, if it's good stuff, it's going to get pumped. And it just gives the little guy so much more leverage than on any of these other social media platforms, you know?
Dude, it's crazy. I post something on Instagram and 18 people like it.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know, go check out this new song, whatever, which is the worst way to market your music. Which, you know, that's why I got these coaches. They're like, hey, everybody says, go check out my song. They're like, how are you going to stand out from that? They're like, you need to tell people stories about like either what these songs are about or what you're about. And it's like, okay. So yeah, I get on TikTok and I'm like, oh my gosh, it seems like they're a lot more open-minded on TikTok in the sense that you talk about conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
You do anything on Meta, on a Meta platform that says, hey, look at these 25 newscasts that are all saying the exact same verbatim words. You don't think you're being programmed?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, and then the Meta algorithm's like, nope. Like, we can't do that. But then you get on TikTok.
Is a blah, 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 blah. It's like 30 news stations saying the exact same thing. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you know the difference between a conspiracy theory and the truth, don't you?
Couple months.
Yeah. About 6 months. And I love that. I love that about the internet, man. So many people are being exposed now. People are understanding, oh my gosh, dude, this is a shell world that we live in. Oh, yeah, like, you know, 500 people run the entire world and there's 8 billion of us. Like, what are we doing? And that's my man, Andy Frisella always references ants. He goes, you know, the grasshoppers were the bad guys in ants and they controlled all the ants. Yep. And the ants realized there was way more of them, you know? And
the ants, baby.
when he said that on his podcast, they actually flagged him for it.
What? Like, because, no shit.
Yeah. It's like, wow, dude, that's how bad like it's gotten. And so, man, I'm a truth seeker. You're probably a truth seeker as well. We don't want to hear BS. I mean, somebody like you who's been in shit in Afghanistan and seen pretty much the worst of what humans can do to one another.
Well, that's the thing, which, too, dude, you see the worst, but you also see the best, dude. And that's the thing, is you see people going through extraordinary measures to save a life or, you know, putting themselves in harm's way. And it's, you see the worst, but you see the best, man. And it's just something that I'll never take for granted, man. It gave me such a better perspective on the world. And it's just something that I would never change, dude.
Dude, and you know, like I said, we say it a lot. Thank you for your service. We appreciate what you guys do, but I don't think people understand exactly what you guys go through and, you know, what you guys deal with when you come home. Mm-hmm. You've got all these people, you know, I had a lot of Vietnam veterans, and one of my biggest guitar mentors was a Vietnam veteran up in West Virginia. And he's like, man, you know, I came home a 21-year-old kid and people were spitting on me, calling me a baby killer. And, you know, that really ignited a passion in my heart to like, these guys need a voice. You know, if we can stand up for what these guys are doing, I mean, that is like, that really is a passion of ours because, I mean, dude, we're just the courtyard jesters. You know, we're out here just trying to make people smile. So you guys are the ones allowing that to happen. Like my old man says, he goes, if it wasn't for the military, we'd be all speaking German right now.
Yeah.
Dude, well, people don't realize that. Like kids that I'm playing for in bars right now, were not alive during 9/11. 9/11 might as well be World War II.
Exactly.
You know? And they don't understand. Number one, they don't understand the stresses that we went through as Americans and especially as military guys, but just as civilians, you know, it was a very stressful time. There was this war going on. Are we winning the war? What's happening? Is this coming to our soil again? You know, the first strike was on us, and you know, it was a very stressful time. And man, these kids today, it's like they just grew up with this 20-year war going on, and it becomes white noise to them. So when we have less people now joining our military than ever before, you know, I think a lot of that has gotten exposed about, oh, well, it turns out a lot of these wars are avoidable. We've been at war for freaking how many, like, you know, there's always a war going on. Well, what is this really about? Is this about freedom or is this about money?
Exactly.
And like I said, these politicians are getting exposed, and regardless of what it is for, these boys and girls who are joining up are going to fight for freedom. And that's the mentality. So do I fault them at all? 0%, you know, but it's the guys like you when they get out and they go, yo, there's some fuckery afoot here.
Yeah. Well, you know? Yeah, that's, and well, the difference too, between like us and the Vietnam vets is that we were in a time where, you know, it was right after 9/11. Everyone was, we got back, people cheered, you know what I mean? And the difference with the Viet, like you said, people were spitting in their faces. And that's why I make it a point. Every time I see someone with a Vietnam vet hat or, you know, I'm like, thank you. You know, thank you so much, dude. Like, thank you. You know, and they appreciate it so much, bro. They fucking, you can tell it hits them heavy because of what they went through coming back when they came back. You know what I mean? So that was a huge difference in us coming back. We weren't ostracized for, you know, getting drafted and going to, like, they get drafted, go do what their country tells them to do to to defend their country, and then get shit on when they get back for something that they didn't even want to do. It's so
they didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And now we know the whole thing that started that was a false flag.
Yes,
so it's
yes.
like, dude, so like with the information like that, dude, when I was 18, I was gung-ho. It was 2008. I was graduating high school. I was a football player, all state, you know, captain of the team type of dude. And the Marine recruiter would hang out at our field house.
Yeah.
And this guy would hang out, you know, 2-3 times a week, and we became buds. And I'm like, man, you know, shit, this seems like a team I could join up with after the, you know, after school. I don't really want to go to college. I don't like school that much. I like physical activity, love shooting my guns, you know, we'll go fight for freedom. And that guy called my house one night during dinner, and my mom picked up the phone, and he said, this is Staff Sergeant so-and-so. I'm here to talk to Patrick about joining up with the Marines. And my mom goes, no, you are not, and hangs up the phone. And I'm like, mom, I'm like, that's a buddy of mine. Like, we've been building a relationship for the last, she goes, no, she goes, you're going to go over there and be a bullet sponge because you're big. She was like, they're going to have you doing stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I want to do stuff. I'm like, you know, gung ho. And, you know, I ended up not joining, and it killed me. I was lost. I had no direction, no purpose, went to college, became a drunk, just didn't go to school, didn't care about, you know, but looking back, I'm like, dude, I would have been strapped to a 50 cal, you know, walking over freaking all this, you know, explosives and all this bullshit, because I'm a big capable guy. Like, I was fast, I was strong, I can carry a lot of fucking gear, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, like they're not going to put me behind a computer.
Yeah. You and me walking around carrying shit, a lot of shit.
Yeah. Right. So I'm, you know, so as much as I wanted to serve my country, looking back now and kind of knowing what we know and what these wars are about, and just all the corruption in the world governments, you know, it's like, man, a big part of me is happy that I didn't go. But at the same time, dude, I just feel for all those souls that did go. And that's why I have just the utmost respect, dude, because hearing guys like your story, and, you know, I've got buddies in the military now. I actually lost my best friend. He was my childhood friend since we were 8 years old. And
damn,
he was a Navy rescue swimmer. You know, you talk about the good that these guys do, and it's not all just blood and gore and the worst that people can do to each other. But, you know, my boy, Jimmy, he was a rescue swimmer. We grew up from the time we were 8 years old. You know, he tried out for the SEALs, and he got hurt like 80% of the way through, blew his knee out. And I'm like, dude, like through buds. And came a rescue swimmer, jumping out of helicopters, sending me videos, you know, him dangling from the chopper in Alaska with an American flag. I'm just like, my heart is just as full as it can be. I'm so proud of my boys, you know. And so anyways, during COVID, he was out on a training exercise, and their chopper, you know, made the loop, came back, dropped the bird on the deck, and one of the hydraulic hoses, because our fucking government can't afford to replace an $8 hydraulic hose, one of the hydraulic hoses let loose and the bird started just rocking back and forth, chattered off the deck. Most of these guys were getting unstrapped, so they weren't like, you know, they're ready to get off.
Yeah.
And dude, it fell 90 feet off the deck of this thing upside down. I'm pretty sure they all died on impact. But you know, it's like people think that bad things only can happen in war zones. And since that event, his wife has started the AWS1 James Buryak Foundation. I know that's a mouthful. AWS1 James Buryak Foundation. And that is to help with families that are going through these losses, these unexpected losses, because I don't know if you know this, but if you don't die in a war zone, the families get a lot less benefits.
I didn't know that, actually. I did not know that.
If my boy would have been overseas training, she would have got a lot more benefits. And and anyhow, now she's a huge advocate for that, for families that are, you know, dealing with this loss, this unexpected loss. And you realize how many of these guys are going down in training accidents.
Yeah.
And it's unreal. It's unbelievable. People think because we're not out boots on the ground shooting bad guys that bad things aren't happening. But dude, you know, once again, this is why these guys deserve the utmost respect. I mean, you could just be out on a hunky dory day on the Pacific Ocean, ready to go do a training. And the next thing you know, you're, you know, 2 miles down in the drink.
Yeah. Damn.
But very, very difficult, man. And, you know, grew a lot through that and still dealing with that every day. That was back in 2020. And, you know, so I've got a lot of other buddies in the military right now, and I just think about them all the time, you know, and that's why when you see them, you just freaking hug their neck and tell them you love them. And, you know, and it makes it that much more special when you get to see them. So.
Yeah, man. Damn. It's tough, man. Like I said, I wouldn't change any of it. Even the shitty stuff that I went through and, you know, being a medic attached to an infantry platoon, like we were not in the best spot. So it was,
yeah,
you know,
dude,
it was crazy. But, you know, talking about like conspiracy theories and stuff, it's just, that was the, if I never had done that, I wouldn't have seen what I saw and kind of had this, like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is happening here? You know what I mean? And
what is this about? Right.
Seeing all the, well, for one, seeing all the poppy fields, right? So if you go to Afghanistan, it's full of poppy fields all over the place. And like, you know, on the, one of the guys on the deployment after mine was talking about how where they were on their second deployment, they were in the largest poppy field in like the world. It's a like crazy huge vast amount of land that this poppy fields cover. So they're not allowed to destroy it or anything. They just kind of gotta, you know, they're doing their patrols and stuff, but they can't mess with the poppy fields. Well, they would send in guys from Pakistan because they were right on the border of Pakistan to harvest all the poppy. Then they bring it back into Pakistan. And if you look at the statistics, before 2001, we exported less than 1%, or Afghanistan exported less than 1% of the world's opium supply. Less than 1%. After, it's 90% of the world's opium supply. So we've been there the last 20 years. Guarding these poppy fields, they're getting harvested. We're not burning them down or anything. What's the biggest issue in America is opioid overdoses. Like, you know, it's like, what the hell are we doing, dude? Like, what is happening here?
Well, it's like people want to throw the word or the term conspiracy theory around. And so you hear that, you hear those statistics.
Yep.
Less than 1%. Then after we go and save the fucking world, now it's 90%.
Yep.
And okay, now we have a huge opioid problem. Well, yep. People who are doped up on opium, what are they easy to do? Control.
Mm.
Number two in this equation, who controls our politicians?
Lobbyists.
Big pharma.
Yeah.
So big pharma, big oil.
Yep.
So, you know, big tech, all these things. So, I mean, hell. You know, we get them doped up. We can do whatever we want by 2020, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The people don't realize that there are long-term games in play.
Mm-hmm.
People look at what's going on in my life today. What's coming across my screen today? There's always a thing. It's like, dude, take a step back, look at what's going on, and ask yourself, you know, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
You know,
see,
I mean, what is the reason for this? Why do we have this? And God, dude, I could go on this for days. I mean,
dude, me too. Because, well, I went to basic training with, I don't know if you remember this person, Bradley Manning, who turned into, he goes by Chelsea Manning now. He was the guy that did like the WikiLeaks stuff.
Yeah.
So I went to basic training with this guy, and I saw how he interacted and basically the media portrayed it like he was treated unfairly and all this stuff was done wrong to him and he's a victim of all this stuff. I'm like, none of that happened. You know what I mean? So I physically saw, if I wasn't physically there and knew what happened, I would believe what the media was saying. So I'm like, wait, this didn't happen. This didn't happen. This didn't happen. Like, what the hell is going on? That was the first time I was really like, what are they talking about? Where are they getting this information? So it really started, my whole military stint is, it just made me question all this stuff. Like, what is going on, dude? So it's just, I don't know, man.
And by that point, you're locked into a 5-year contract, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yep. yep.
So, yeah, they got you by then, but man, you know, it really is. It's disheartening to think about, you know, I mean, I'm sure you remember before 9/11 and everything, and maybe it's nostalgia because we were younger or whatever, or it was pre-internet, but I always just think, man, what a good time. Like, people weren't buried. People weren't buried in their phones. People weren't arguing with each other. Now, you know, we were worried about what was here around our own table.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could touch you, that's what I'm worried about. But now you get everyone's problems.
Yeah.
All over the world. You can get on TikTok and, you know, you can find me bitching about Shania Twain or like whatever. You're like, now I got people fighting in my comments section about something that happened in 2018. It's like, dude, this shit never would have happened before all this technology. And, you know, you talk about the opioid crisis. So many people are depressed. Give them a Xanax. You know, so many people have pain. Give them a pill, or this, that, or the other. And you know, I'm not saying there's no place for medicine. There absolutely is a place for medicine, but
it's reactive.
I think people just look for that easy button. Mm. Hey, man, what can I take to help me lose weight? It's exactly. A question I get all the time. I go steak and working eggs out. And fucking heavy weights.
yeah.
That's what you can do. That's what you can take to lose weight. Oh, well, that takes a lot of work, man. I don't have time. Well, take a fucking pill. I don't know what you want me to tell you, you know? So, you know, you came to me and asked what I did. This is what I did. So,
well, that's hard. I don't want to do hard stuff.
Yeah.
I'm
so depressed. I'm depressed. I'm anxious. I'm jittery. I can't sleep. I'm like, what did you do physical today? Did you exercise? Did you sweat? Did you get your heart rate up? Well, no, but my doctor's got me on this new shit. And now I was depressed, but now I'm thinking about killing myself. And it's like, well, dude, like so many of these issues can be resolved just by, drink water, eat right, exercise. Like, dude, these are so simple, but there's no money. There's no money on the table for that.
If you're healthy, there's no money. There's no money in a healthy person. Keeping you chronically sick.
There's not.
Oh, take this for this symptom. Don't change your habits at all. Take this. Oh, this causes this, this, and this. Take this for that too. Oh, well, that causes this, this, and this. So take this now. You know, it's never like fix yourself.
Yeah. Next thing you know, you're on a cocktail of pills every morning and morning, afternoon, and night, and you're still feeling bad, you know, dude, straight up, man. So I think I'm going to get on a little bit of a tangent here, but like, you know, we just had the school shooting in Nashville a couple of weeks ago, and we see these things happening a lot. And you see these kids and they're just kind of disenfranchised and you say, what could make somebody want to do that? You know? And I've really thought about this and you think about, okay, well, social media is blowing up. Who do they show you? The people that are making it, the people that are balling, right? Well, okay, well, I can't be one of those, man. Now I'm depressed. Let me take these pills. okay, well, now I'm a piece of shit because I've just been sitting on my couch in my sweatpants for the last week because these pills make me a zombie. So snowball. Now we get to a point where I feel like a lot of these kids and a lot of adults have just lost hope. We used to have a thing called the American dream. Mm-hmm. You know, a man could go out and support a family on $40,000 a year. His wife could stay home and he could buy a 3 or 4 bedroom house.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
one income.
And now kids are seeing, holy shit, I can be a gamer. I can be a live streamer. I can be a TikTok influencer. Mm-hmm. And then when that doesn't work out, well, now they realize, shit, life's hit me in the face. I might have to go get a job. Mm-hmm. I don't want to work at Dairy Queen. I don't want to change oil for the rest of my life. Whatever it is, mm-hmm. I don't want to have to get up, be somewhere. And I feel like we've lost hope as a country. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, COVID didn't help anything. Now groceries are more, gas is more, houses are doubled. Like
World War III is incoming.
and dude, I'm like, that's what Thrive, the song Thrive, is about. Since I was a kid, it's the end of the world. It's coming. 2012, the Mayan said it's coming. I remember being drunk on a tailgate in 2012, looking up at the sky, waiting for a fucking meteor, going, let's go, baby.
Well, even 99, you know? Dude. Remember the Y2K? Like, all the computers are going to fire off all the nuclear missiles, and we're all going to die in midnight.
So that's the first line of that song. Ever since I can remember, the world is about to end, whether it's the Bible or the Mayans or these little bitty rocket men. And,
I love that. How do you get into that writing? You know, do you come up with like a melody first or something, or do the lyrics come first?
Sometimes there's usually a melody involved, whether it's a vocal melody or a guitar riff. I might just be picking around on a riff and find something cool, and I'm like, this sounds rough, you know, this sounds like an outdoor song. I wrote Thrive. It was probably in 2018, before COVID and everything. And I was just like, dude, I'm a bit of a prepper. I'm not going to go into detail everything that I have prepped, but just know it's rice, beans, and bullets. And nobody needs to know that.
Nice.
And I always tell people, if you don't have bullets, your rice and beans will surely be taken.
Yeah, right. Correct.
So that's the whole thing is about Thrive is like, dude, I'm ready. Like, if y'all are about to come turn the lights off on a boy, let's see what, you know, who's worth their salt. And, I got three smokers, wood burning smokers out back, you know, and two of which that I've built. So we can preserve meat, you know, we can hunt meat. We can freaking, I got a river right across the street. We got water filtration. Like, let's see, let's see who's worth their salt. And this is almost kind of what the world needs is a good cleansing.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
with all the wokeness,
good reset,
all the wokeness, all these problems, all the he's racist, he's mm-hmm. transphobe, he's this, he's that. It's like, dude, you guys don't understand problems.
Yeah.
Wait until somebody freaking EMPs us and knocks out our power grid for 18 months. Or wait till they knock it out for 18 days and you will see hell on earth, the likes of which you've never seen. There's a song I listen to and it says something like, you don't want to see what a man can do when his family ain't eating for 7 days or something like that. You know?
Oh, yeah, dude. For sure.
I mean, you talk about a scary situation. So anyways, I'm no fear monger. If anything, Thrive is a motivational anthem saying, hey, let's go, baby. Like, we're ready to rock and roll whenever you are. Stop tempting me with this end of the world. If it's the end of the world, then let's do it. Shit or get off the pot.
Yeah.
You know, because like I said, people would realize the problems that they have are very minuscule. Mm-hmm. In the grand scheme of things, you know, do you have enough to eat? Do you have enough to drink? Do you have a roof over your head where you don't get wet when it rains and you don't feel the wind when it blows? You're doing all right.
Yeah.
And back to that, taking care of what's around your table, you know, that would really
help a lot.
That would be an extreme pendulum swing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you would only be able to take care of what's around your table or you would perish, you know. And
well, that's a problem.
Man,
too.
It's just
with society today, nobody's doing that. Everyone wants to fix the world. Nobody's focusing on, hey, maybe if I go help my neighbor out, or, you know, most people don't even know their neighbor's name. You know, like when did we stop taking care of our neighbors? You know, it's just like, you want to fix everything else in the world, but you can't fix yourself. So you're trying to get more coffee?
Yeah. Yeah. I told her, I said, hey, you're going to have to be my coffee runner. She's like, well, I got stuff to do. I'm going to have my headphones in. He's great.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So that Thrive song, for that one, for instance, do you kind of write that in one sitting, or does it take multiple? Because my wife comes up with stuff all the time. She'll just come up with a song and be like, I wrote this song in the car on the way home. Like, sing, you know, I'm like,
yeah.
How the hell did you do that? So it's just always interesting, because some people take time and, you know, go back on it over and over again. Some people just, boom, it's there.
Dude, it was every song is different. I've got songs that I would start and put down. You know, I used to have a notebook. I would always write in a notebook, actually up until like the last year or so. Now I'm doing the iNotes or whatever, but
yeah,
thank you, my dear. But I would have a notebook, and then on days when I wasn't really feeling creative, I would just go back to the notebook, and I'd have all these little like four lines, you know? And so it's like, oh my God, I wrote this 7 years ago. I'm like, now something pops into my brain. It's fresh again, and I can finish it. So some songs take literal years to finish. Some songs, like when my dog of 13 years passed away in February, and I was heartbroken, and I wrote a song. I just sat down in the morning, and, you know, I wrote that song out. Boom, 30 minutes. It was just like, you know, it just pours out, and it's just the words are there, and everything's flowing. And it's like, so Thrive was one of those. Thrive was one of those that it was like, it was like everything that was on my mind about, I'm tired of living in fear. Like, we're going to be awesome at this. If this is what's going to happen, like, we're going to be ready.
Yeah.
And it just went right out onto the page. And I'm really proud of that one. I'd like to get that one on like an outdoor show as like a theme song or something. One of these Alaska shows or something.
That would be good. That would be good.
Yeah, man. A placement. Hey, you can't go wrong with a placement.
So when you started writing songs, like you started young, right? Were you writing songs when you were...
About 13, I wrote my first song. Yeah.
How did you have any like structure of how a song is built, or did you just kind of by intuition, by having been around music, did you just kind of figure it out?
Yeah. You know, nobody ever sat down and said, hey, it needs to go verse, chorus, bridge, chorus out. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I would listen to Tom Petty. Okay, well, Tom Petty did a verse and then a chorus and then a verse and a chorus. Okay, and then there was this thing there. So it's like, it was kind of intuition, you know, just being familiar with music. I mean, you hear enough songs, you know the bridge doesn't come first, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was kind of just laid out. But like Thrive, for example, starts with the chorus. And I love that, you know, it's like, It's kind of a down section. Betcha I'll be far from the city, high on the mountain where I won't be found. It's kind of intimate, you know, and that introduces people. Then it, boom, fire it up, hits some rock and roll. You hit that next chorus and it's full blown all the way on 10. And it's like, so, man, it's wild. I never had any structure. I remember moving to Nashville, and I'm like, I remember telling an experienced writer, it's like, how long have you been writing? I'm like, oh, you know, a while now. And I know how a song's laid out, you know. And they go, well, you're doing better than most. And I'm like, really? I'm like,
nice.
Like, you know, like. So there is no right way. To me, like I said, if it's a good song's going to win. A good song's going to come through and be relatable to people. And I mean, as far as that goes, it was just taking influences from everybody else and saying, how would a Stevie Ray Vaughan done it? How would a Skinner have done it? And the first band that I was in, when I was 13, we formed a band in my mom's basement and we wrote a song together. And
what was the name of that band?
My first Iron Horse Outlaws.
Nice.
Right, baby. We were badasses. We thought we were cool as shit, man. Like, of all the things I did, I was, you know, I played hockey, I played football, baseball, did track, and I was pretty proficient at all of them, and had teams. And, you know, if I was a captain of the team, you know, that's a big deal to those guys on the team. My buddies in my band, they didn't give a shit. They didn't care. And I was never more proud to walk through the halls at school than I was with my band. You know, it's nice. we're a freaking, like, I don't care what else is going on. Like, all the other stuff's cool. I like football because I can go freaking annihilate people and take my aggression out. But, like, it wasn't my passion, you know. It was more just a thing. But when I had my band with me, man, that was, like, something special. Even to this day, like, getting out of the van and you're walking into a truck stop and it's four guys just looking dirty and worn out from the road. And, you know, it's like, yeah, man, like, this is what I dreamed of when I was 13 and we were playing in my mom's basement, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and it's those times that are the best, dude, that you look back and you're like, in the moment, it can be like, man, this is fucking tiring and whatever, you know? And you look back on it and you're like, that was fucking awesome. Like, that was the coolest time. Dude,
absolutely, man. It really is. It's like, you know, and being the leader of the band and everything, you know, these guys don't look up to me or anything. I think they're grateful for a paycheck, but we're all friends. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I feel that responsibility, you know, to take care of these guys. Yeah. And that's what I tell these new guys. I say, hey, when you roll with Miller Holler, you're with us. I said, if anybody's fucking with you, you let me know. And we're going to take care of it for you because now you're one of us, you know?
Yep.
And it's, I don't want to say this in a negative light, but it's kind of like a gang. Yeah. Like, if you're my boy, if you're out with me, I got you.
Yep.
And, you know, I love that.
Scooby-Doo
was
a gang, dude, and they were awesome. So don't worry.
They were awesome. Yeah. They had a sweet van too. Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, man. That's,
Yeah, dude.
That's a cool way to look at it, man. And that's great. Yeah.
Always love that dynamic, man. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, it's almost like a military in an aspect because you have this group of people that you're just, you know, in a common goal with. You share a common goal. You have common interests and you're working towards something, you know? So it's almost, you're functioning as a team and you're figuring out how to move about the world as, you know, a group. So it's really cool.
And it's a very delicate dynamic, you know. Yeah. Hey, good luck telling a group of musicians, hey guys, let's take it easy on the Jim Beam on this show. I'm like, oh geez, like I'm trying to be the boss, but I'm not trying to be the boss, you know.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Hey, you know, very delicate, you know. It's like, dude, shit. The last group I was with, I remember this very specifically. We, you know, we had a no drinking policy on stage towards the end, and
yeah,
a couple of our guys.
What got that going?
Oh god,
I need to hear the story.
Let me tell this story.
The day after. Yes, I need to hear that. Why there was a no drinking policy enacted?
So we were playing with one of our buddies on bass who hadn't played with us in a couple of years, and him and our drummer had a few drinks before the show, just catching up, whatever. And then a few drinks at the beginning. And like by the end of the first set, these guys were getting a little sloppy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I wasn't drinking, but hey, I'm no saint, you know, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you one way or the other. But I remember our lead singer said, I pay your fucking bills. He said, y'all better straighten up or I'm gonna fire every one of you motherfuckers and all that. I'm like, and I'm sitting there going, oh geez, dude, like this is not a good look right here. You know, I know we got a job to do and yeah, I'm on the same page as you, but like wrong delivery. So like I said, like it's very delicate. Like you think that made him drink any less? Like,
no.
So, yeah. But yeah, so like it's very delicate dynamic. But the reason why we weren't drinking, so this is my old man's fault. I'm gonna pin this on him if he's watching. Dan, 110% your fault. But we were playing New Year's Eve 2017 going into 2018 in my hometown, Roanoke, Virginia. And my old man got us some hotel rooms at the Hotel Roanoke. It's a nice hotel. You know, he's like, hey, I'll put you guys up tonight, you know, since the bar's not covering it, whatever. He's like, me and your mom got a room. Come by the room and we'll have some drinks before. But like, my dad is my biggest fan and biggest proponent. You know, he loves that we're doing the band. He's like, whatever you got to do, man, just keep doing music. That's never awesome. Give up on it. You know, he's 100%. And I can't say that about some of the other musicians I know. Their parents are like, when are you going to get a real job?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
My dad has always been of the mindset, hey, don't work for anybody if you can help it, you know, like make your own way. Even if you struggle for a little bit, it's going to be better than take a shit from some guy.
Yeah.
You know, for 40 years. And then when you retire, they say, here's a gold watch or whatever. The fuck, you know,
don't fuck like, yourself. Here's your gold watch. Never talk to us again.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, anyways, the old man, he's our hype man. You know, he's the biggest hype man we got. If he's at the bar and there's people around. Yeah. You guys want a shot? Yeah. That's my boy up there. Yeah. 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 Miller Holler. Go check him out. Yeah. You know, yeah, yeah, they're on, yeah, Instagram and all that stuff that you kids do. Yeah, yeah. So anyways, Pops is like, hey, come by the room before the show. I got some drinks. He's got his freaking mini bar set up that he brought from home. And we're pounding whiskeys and, you know, buttery nipples.
Yeah.
The old man, if you're around him, loves to make buttery nipples because, it, verbatim his words, I just like saying nipple. Yeah. You know?
Your dad seems like a guy I would hang out with.
Dude, he is a real one, dude. He is my hero. My dad was my best man at my wedding. He's the dude.
That's great. So, That's great.
Anyhow, we get to this bar, and we'd already had some issues with this bar owner in the past because he made us like pay for Red Bulls or something. We're like, dude, we just drove 7 hours. You can't give us a Red Bull. So like, we're already a little bit salty going into this one, and we're like, fuck it, dude. If we're buying drinks, like, we're buying drinks. Like, yeah. Let's just go and we're going to have a good time tonight. People are bringing us shots. I asked the girl for a Jim Beam and Coke, and she pours it in a pint glass. There's like this much freaking Jim Beam and like this much Coke. And I'm like, all right. You know, at the time, that wasn't a big deal. We were drinking pretty heavy back then. And so, anyways, end of the night comes. My wife was there. She was my girlfriend at the time. And I mean, dude, we're sloshed completely sloshed, played the show. God only knows how it sounded. She's got a beer in her hand and a bouncer comes up and grabs her arm and says, can't have the beer. We're closing down, and grabbed her pretty aggressively.
Oh,
and, I said, hey, you can't touch her like that.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm drunk. And when you get drunk, every fight I've ever been in, because I was drinking, you know, almost.
Well, hey, someone grabs your wife like that, dude. You gotta, you bro, gotta go in.
Not do that. Like I've punched other guys who were smacking on their wives. I didn't even know them. I see a guy smacking right. A girl. That was one of our viral videos, and I talked about blocked that dude, broke his dog, could have killed him. I mean, he hit his head on the pavement outside of a bar, but
he didn't.
I do not go for that.
But he didn't hit her after that.
Bro, I do not go for that shit. Like, if you put hands on a woman, dude, you better look out if we're around. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So anyways, this guy grabs my lady's arm, and I said, you can't grab her like that. And I stood up, and next thing I know, I got 7 bouncers in front of me, and I'm like, shit. I'm like, is this really what we're about to do? Like, these, I'm stumbling around drunk. These guys are about to whoop my ass. And I said, y'all might whoop my ass, but it's going to be hell on earth for 2 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love it.
So anyways, we're walking out of, you know, we're loading our gear. I'm pissed. I've done like, I kicked something in the bar, and then I kicked over one of the like heating lamps, like the big propane heaters that they had. I kicked one of those over outside. Just being an asshole. Yeah. I mean, not something I'm proud of at all. You know, if there's anybody watching this, don't do that. Like, so I end up owing the bar money at the end of the night for all the shit that I've broken. My lady's trying to go use the bathroom, and I talked to the band. I said, hey guys, I'm off the sauce. Like, that shit got out of hand. We're never gonna play at that bar again. those seven guys could have jumped me and beat my ass, you know, like bad things could have happened. And we realized that, and we realized this is not the reputation that we want. It's not professional. It wasn't a good look. Word travels fast in this business, you know? So anyhow, we actually stayed sober through all of 2018 and didn't drink on stage. And I was so nervous about it. No harm, no foul. Lessons learned, you know, lessons learned.
Hey, it changed. It changed the behavior. You know what I mean? Brought you to a better place.
Life is about perspective. And
during spring break at a baseball tournament.
Yeah.
I got arrested for being 18, trying to get in an 18 and over club, but I tried to fuck my ID up and make it look like, cause I was born 88 and I like put some chalk on the 8 to make it look like a 3. And not only that, I had cargo shorts on with 2 beers in the pockets, like the regular pockets. And then, 2 beers in one side of the cargo pocket and 2 beers in the other. So I'm going into this club and they're like, dude, what are you doing? I have all this beer in my pocket. They're like, what are you doing? So they're like, just no, don't come in here. But then I didn't have a phone. This was before cell phones. You know, this was in 2005.
Yeah.
We didn't have cell phones. And I was like, dude, I went back. I was like, dude, I just need to use a phone, bro. I'm like, I need to call somebody to come get me. And then they called the cops over and they brought me into their little room. And I was 18. I had all these beers on me. It was like a long hallway, and I'm sitting at the chair that's closest to the door that we came in.
Yeah.
And they're down at the end of the hallway looking at the computer. Apparently there was like a stabbing or something. This was in Myrtle Beach during spring break. So it was like chaos. So I'm sitting there.
Yeah.
They're looking at this computer. I'm sitting there. I have all these beers in my pocket. I'm like, I'm fucked. And this cop's jacket, like a winter type jacket, like a cop, is hanging next to me. I'm looking at them, looking at the screen. I just start taking the beers out and putting them in his coat pocket. I got all of them out, every single one of the beers, because I knew he was like, they didn't search me yet. They just sat me down. I was like,
my God.
I sit there. I'm like, all right. Like, fuck, this guy's going to pick up his jacket and he's going to get all his beers. So I'm looking at him. I take every single one of them back out and put them back in my pockets before they didn't notice a thing. They didn't notice a thing. And then literally like right after I put the last one in, he comes over. He's like, all right. He's like, I had to deal with that over there. He's like, stand up. I got to search you. Do you have anything on you? I was like, God damn it. I should have left them in the pocket. I stand up. I was like, yeah, I got a beer. He's like, okay. I take one out. He's like, anything else? I was like, yeah. Another beer. I did that for all 6 of them.
Oh my God.
And he goes, you got 2 options. I can either arrest you for having a fake ID or disorderly conduct. I'm like, disorderly conduct. And then I had to spend the night in jail. We had a baseball tournament, a game the next morning. Nobody knew I got arrested. I spend the night in jail. They take me out to court. Like, we're all shackled to each other. People are in there for like swimming in their hotel pool after it's closed and like stuff like that. So our hands are handcuffed together. Our feet are handcuffed in like a chain gang. And we all like kind of waddle out to the court. And he's like, you know, time served, whatever. So time served. I get out at like 9 something. I think I had baseball practice at 10 or the game or whatever it was. I'm like sprinting down Myrtle Beach. Nobody knew I was arrested still. I get to where the hotel is. One of the girls that I was out that was hanging out with us was on the balcony. She's like, Duff, what happened to you? She's like, I told your coach that we couldn't find you. And we ended up calling the police station. We found out you were in jail and blah, blah, blah. I was like, they were like, we told your coach. I was like, no, I would have gotten away with it. Like, I had to sit out the one game, which ended up being like 6 innings because something happened that we couldn't finish the game. And then I got to play the rest of the time. But then the next year, a dude got in trouble for smoking a cigar and the coach kicked him off the team. And the kid's parents were so pissed. They're like, Duff got arrested last year and you're kicking him off the team for smoking a cigar.
That is awesome. Oh my God. Dude.
Top it off. I was wearing a pink shirt. I had a pink shirt going into jail. And they're like, yo, Pink, what you in for? I was like, having an, my being 18 and trying to get into an 18 and over club. I'm like, I don't know. Fucked.
Dude, so funny. Like when you're in that initial holding cell, like I was in there with probably like 20 guys and everybody, oh, what are you in for? I was like, man, you know, drunk, you know, whatever, whatever, this, that. These guys are in there like, yeah, I just got out yesterday. And then they said I stole a lawnmower, but I didn't steal it. And now I'm back in here. Like, I'm realizing, like, holy shit. Like, you know, and I hold no judgments against people, but I'm like, this ain't my scene. You know, this is not everybody in here has a story like this. Like, these guys know, oh, yeah, we're going to have lunch around 11 and then dinner comes at 5 and, you know, stay away from the turkey and all this. I'm like, dude, if you knew as much about, you know, anything trying to else. Stay out of jail as you know about being in jail, you'd be all right. Like, yep. What are you doing?
Yep.
So I realized real quick, like, this is no place that I ever want to be again. And,
happens
you know,
to the best of us.
Dude. And, you know, it's like, that's another thing. It's like, I'm so grateful for that experience, because if that wouldn't have happened, what road would we still be continuing on? Would we be better now, or would we be worse now?
Yep.
And so, you know, going back to those hard times, those hardships that make you grow.
Yep.
That was for sure one of them, you know, and we didn't tell that whole story about, you know, all that for a good few years. I would just tell people, oh, we got too drunk on New Year's Eve. But, you know, the nitty gritty is, like, bad things have to happen in order for you to realize sometimes that you don't want to do them again, you know. And so we definitely carry that with us now. I got no problem with partying and drinking and carrying on. I'll run amok with you all night long. So, but when it's time to work, it's time to work. This is a place, this is our place of business. You wouldn't be drunk going into your day job. Maybe you would, but I always tell them, you know, I don't care what you guys do. This is not, you know, this is not a government position. I don't care if you're, you know, whatever you're doing, just as long as you're straight on stage.
Yep.
As long as the music sounds good, as long as we're not stumbling around and acting a fool. Like, I don't care what you do, but let's try and conserve it till the end of the night, you know?
Yeah.
Like, at the when the last notes hits, you know, we'll take it from 0 to 100 if you want
Slam
to. I don't
shocked.
Care.
Yeah, have them lined up so you hit that last note. Boom. Go, 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 go,
go. Oh, God. The boys I play with now, I've never had more fun with in my whole life.
That's awesome.
I mean, they will freaking get rowdy with you. You know, I mean, there's always a handle of Jim Beam in the van. There's always, you know, it's just recklessness. Oh yeah. We did a trip going down to Florida the other day and we played a 6-hour show, 6-hour shift in Nashville. It was broken up like 4.5 hours actual play. And we got done at 10 at night, had to sound check in like right under Tampa. So it was about 13-hour drive for us. We had to sound check at like noon the next day. So we got like 13 hours to be somewhere in, you know, 14 hours. And I'm like, all right, boys, I'll take the first shift. If I can make it till like 4 a.m. and one of you take over. All right, cool. Well, naturally they're like, hey guys, our drummer, he pulls out a handle of Tito's or something. He goes, hey, I got this for the ride. And then our bass player goes, dude, no way. He reaches in his bag and pulls out a handle of Jim Beam. He goes, I brought this for the ride. And so they're the three of these guys are freaking drinking out of the bottle, chasing it with energy drinks. And I'm like, I'm going to drive all damn night. These son of bitches ain't going to drive a lick, you know? But I don't care, man. I'm rolling. I'm drinking Red Bulls. We got the music cranked up. We're having a good time. And it's like you said, those hard times sometimes are the most fun.
But
you know, they got enough rest to where we got to sound check the next day, had to play our show at 5 and everything went great. Blew them out of the water and we're going to be back. So,
and those are times you bond, dude. Yeah. Those are times you really get to know each other and that, like, just cut it up and have a fun, just be idiots.
Yes. So, you know, like I said, this is the band that I dreamed about being in when I was 13 years old. You know,
that's awesome,
so,
dude. That's awesome.
Whenever
when do you guys
whenever
have
it
shows?
Gets... When's oh, shows? Yeah, we're playing. Let's see, we're playing at the Wild Horse here in Nashville on Wednesday and Friday. So the Wild Horse is the bar that's going to get changed over to called Luke Combs Bar.
Okay.
But it is, you know, it's a huge place. They used to film a TV show back there in the day, and it was on like CMT every Saturday morning. It's the line dancing, and it's like the line dance capital of Nashville. So
okay,
that's the place. And yeah, dude, we're lucky enough to be, you know, prime time slot kind of regulars there a couple times a month. And then we tour a lot. So yeah, we'll actually be in Christiansburg, Virginia next month. I think Evansville, Indiana. I think we've got some Kentucky dates. So yeah, man, just burning it up. We're getting a bus this week, so that's exciting.
Okay. You in Texas at all, ever?
Nah. Is that where you're based out of?
Yeah, I'm in Texas. I'm in close to like an hour from Houston.
Oh, right on. Dude, I was my uncle lives in Fort Worth, and he was just up here in Nashville this week, and we had dinner, and I said, man, who do you know down there that can get me a gig in Texas? I was like, I haven't been to Texas in a long time, and I really want to get that.
I got a buddy of mine who he's in Nashville right now, I believe. He's a guitar player, writes his own songs, stuff like that. Ian Wagner, I'm not sure if you ever heard of him, but
I'll look him up.
He's a combat vet. I know he's from Texas, and he's back and forth, like here in Texas, and so he might be able to. I'll send you his info, but yeah, he's a combat.
I was gonna say,
let's get up in Afghanistan and you know, got injured and stuff like that, but really great guitar player, dude. Writes his own stuff, like just a really cool sound too. I think you guys, I mean, he's in Nashville most of the year too, so I think you guys would.
Dude, if you want to make that connection, I'd be more than happy to.
Yeah, dude, definitely. To link up. Definitely. But I see you got the hat. You have looks like musical notes on there. Is that? Or is that just?
No, it's just a pattern on the hat.
Okay, it looked like, it's holes. It looked like Sharpie for a second. It looked like you had notes written in there. I was going to ask what song is on there. That's funny. It's just the way that the light was in it.
just holes. Yeah, this is my old Tractor Supply hat, man. Everybody's like, where'd you get that hat? I'm like, Tractor Supply, like $35, you know, like,
yeah.
It does its job. It's good old, good hard straw hat. People say, is that a felt hat? You know, like a real cowboy felt hat. I said, no, I wear straw hats because we're playing out here sweating our asses off. Yeah, I said, you ever sweated in a felt hat all night? Like, I'm half Italian, so like I sweat just breathing. So as soon as we start playing, I'm wringing sweat. So yeah, I like a good cheap straw hat, man. If this thing gets crushed in the van, it's no harm, no foul, you know. Yep. But
Well, hey, man. We've been going for about 2 hours now almost. Is there anything you want to touch on or?
Man, okay. Hold on. There we are. We've got some new music coming out this year. So everywhere you guys listen to music, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, Amazon Music, if you're broke, whatever, I know you're broke if you got Amazon Music, because that's what I use. So, shit, but nah, man, Spotify, that's the big one. That's the big one that we push is our Spotify. So if we can get you to, you know, follow us on Spotify, that's a huge deal. But we got some, like I said, it's in the studio next week. Songs usually take a few months to produce and get ready to release. So hopefully by midsummer, we'll be looking at something that's really cool. Maybe a 3 or 4 song EP. And yeah, man, just look for us on the socials, on TikTok, Miller Holler. If you Google Miller Holler, we're the only ones. So easy to find. Thank you for having me on, man. Thank you for what you've done with our military. Thank you for expanding our reach with your podcast and everything like that. It's just, it really is. It's a blessing and an honor to be able to, you know, find people and connect on the internet and
oh yeah, dude,
you know, for these relationships. So I'm very, very grateful, man. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. And like I said, I saw your stuff on TikTok and I really liked your music and I'm like, dude, I reach out to people that I like and sometimes answer, sometimes I don't. And I really appreciate you taking the time, dude, to come on, really, honestly.
Hey, absolutely, man. And I appreciate you. I'm gonna go have some breakfast with the wife and maybe take these dogs down the river on a nice Sunday.
All righty, guys. Well, hey, thank you, Pat, from Miller Holler. Check him out on Spotify. Check him out all over. Check him out on TikTok. He's got a lot of cool videos there. Got a lot of cool videos of him with their live performances. Like you said, doing like Metallica covers and stuff like that. Like just in a weird, not a normal, like their own version, like of a cover. You know what I mean? So it's very, it's cool. Check it out. Check it out, fuckers. Thank you, bro.
Thanks, brother.
City folks stay close to the city. Man, I hate to see them when the shit goes down. Me and mine will be high on a mountain with plenty to go around. Have a couple good dogs right beside me. Stack of hickory piled up 10 foot tall. Smoke shack out back just a rolling with the antlers and a 30-30 on the wall.